Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And today we're going to recap the combine. But first, price picks for you out of staters, by the way. I have to say that. You can use the promo code 5FIVE. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's as simple as that. BetterEdge.com. If you're in Florida, you can still play with BetterEdge.com. Go to BetterEdge.com/5Reasons, and you get $20 just for signing up. All right. Combine was, by the way, what happened with Mims? Do we have clarification on that? Because they're saying that he didn't run the shuttle, so that time, that ridiculous time that he had, that was not real. Do we know anything about that? Because that was all over.
It was somebody else, and I think that there was an ordering of there was an ordering problem with an extra entry or something like that. So that time belonged to somebody else.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then we're gonna recap in the days that in the order that they appeared. Defensive linemen and linebackers first. This was a star-studded group, I thought, especially at defensive tackle. A lot of three techs, and it looks like they might have to replace Christian Wilkins some way or not or the other. I came away pretty impressed with Mekhi Wengo. I didn't think he was that athletic. He looks good on tape, but man, 4.85 at what did he weigh in at the combine? What was his weight? Let me see. Oh, he was actually a little lighter than I expected, 284. I thought it was a great group, headlined by Byron Murphy. Your thoughts on this group, and if you want to sprinkle in some linebackers, you could do that too, Simon.
Simon, are you on mute?
Sorry, I hadn't pressed the the button on my microphone. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, we got you.
Perfect. Sorry. I'll just pick up. Oh, yeah. I thought it was an interesting group. I think it was headlined by the Texas guys for different reasons. To me, Murphy has always stood out in this particular process as just a special player. But I thought Braden Fisk of Florida State had those kind of, you know, I loved his sort of signature. Oh, yeah. As he crossed the finish line and ran a 4.78. I thought he was absolutely outstanding in drills. 33.5-inch vert, 9.99 broad jump. 4.37 short shuttle, which was faster than Aaron Donald's 10 years ago, coming in at 6.4, 292. And I think what he showed on tape, we've talked about this before, but the combine, I think to all of us, is the opportunity to essentially back up what we've seen on tape. And if guys are suddenly that you've seen on tape who sort of haven't really played particularly well and they turn up like Mike Mamula and blow the whole place up, that's when you go back and sort of recheck the tape. But I think a lot of what Fisk did at Florida State, that sort of showed up for me on tape in terms of what he was able to do at the combine. There was just some interesting, you know, Brandon Dawless, Chris talked about, we talked about him in OnlyFins. I think Dawless was intriguing. Marcus Harris is a guy that I'm very intrigued about, as a guy that I know the scouts have talked up, somebody who's not played a lot of football, but who they like. But, you know, at 286 pounds, that sounds ridiculous. I kind of wanted to see him run faster than a 5.07.
Mm.
And obviously with the Dolphins, you're looking at some of those bigger guys, you know, McKinley Jackson weighed in at 3.26, Jordan Jefferson at 3.13, Zion Logue at 3.14, all these kind of big guys that you'd expect the Dolphins, if they're going to inherit this Anthony Weaver system, you know, Justin Rogers at 3.30, you know, some big human beings there. I mean, Tavondre Sweat at 366 pounds is just, I mean, that was just a monstrous. But, you know, I thought overall that the class looked good. There were a couple of guys who I didn't think perhaps were as, you know, as dominant as maybe they, you know, you thought they would be. And that's fine. You know, there was nobody that really stood out. And I suppose I didn't think Leonard Taylor did an amazing job. And I don't think he has a great resume necessary to fall back on. I think, you know, he's shown glimpses on tape. But, you know, I didn't think he made a great fist of things in terms of drills and testing, and his 781 three cone I thought was extremely disappointing. But for me, you know, the Texas guys and getting the size for Sweat, because obviously we didn't get a size for him at the Senior Bowl, and then Fisk, I think, Chris, they were the standout performances for me in terms of the interior defensive linemen.
Yeah, I think Fisk clearly stood out, and he was a big winner on the weekend for all the right reasons. Like you said, he is a handful on tape. I thought he was a handful in those in the All-Star practices too. I know that during the game there was a lot of Fisk versus Christian Haynes in the game, and you know, watching those two battle one another, because I think Christian Haynes is going to be a great is going to be a really good NFL guard. You know, watching those two, it looks like a heavyweight bout. It looks like two NFL players beating up on each other, and you know, both getting in their licks, and it's a pretty good matchup. I think he showed that at the combine. I think he showed that he has the ability. I don't know, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, because you've got a much better handle, Simon, on the position, say, from, you know, below, say, Byron Murphy, Johnny Newton, Tavondre Sweat, you know, those kind of guys, Braden Fisk, and Chris Jenkins. I don't know if this is the class, unless you're using the pick, the 21st pick on Byron Murphy or Johnny Newton. I don't know if this is the class where you really replace a Christian Wilkins.
No.
You know,
Murphy could be that kind of guy. Do you know what I mean? He's got that interior quickness, and you know, he's added pass rush to his. I thought last year he added pass rush to his game that you probably hadn't seen on tape before. So I think there's a Wilkins kind of esque ability there. I think Tyler Davis at Clemson's another guy potentially, but there are injury concerns with him. I think, you know, he might fit that bill. He's a little bit smaller, 299, but fills that sort of area.
Yeah. And so I wonder, you know, I do think the world of Johnny Newton, who wasn't able to participate in the combine. Right. So, you know, I'd be fairly excited about potentially replacing Christian Wilkins if they did go Byron Murphy or Johnny Newton at 20 or 21 overall. But if they're going anywhere below that, it either feels like you're getting a Tavondre Sweat to be essentially Michael Pierce, you know, in this defense. Which I do think fits, and that would happen at 55 overall, not at 21 overall. Or, you know, perhaps Braden Fisk, who won't be there at 55 overall. You know, otherwise, I'm not sure that you're really replacing Christian Wilkins, and thus it does kind of bring me toward the free agent market. In replacing Christian Wilkins in this particular class with, you know, with the defensive line, the big boys, the defensive tackles. So that's kind of my only takeaway from the combine watching them.
Yeah, Simon, one guy that I really like, and man, his tape is good, and he ran a blazing fast time, and he's a day three guy. But I just don't know, man. He was just not blessed with the size to play in the NFL. But there has to be a fit for this guy. Kellen Deloche of FSU, man, I've always liked him as a player. If he was 230 pounds, he's a day two guy. Where's his fit in the NFL? Or does he even have one?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, with guys like this? I mean,
the
game has changed so much, hasn't it, in terms of, you know, expectancy of, yeah, people are talking about, you know, linebackers. You know, we don't have those 260-pound linebackers anymore, do we? Or the Lavon Kirkland's at 275. And I was just looking at the linebacker numbers there earlier on in terms of, you know, I'm just trying to see if there's... Okay, so Chris Braswell was 251, but you probably call him an edge, not a linebacker. And then beyond that, I'm just looking at the numbers right now, which doesn't make great radio, but there's not a single player over 250. Dallas Turner's an edge at 247. Gabe Murphy's an edge at 247. I mean, you're looking at linebackers here at 230, 232. You know, it's that there aren't that many, you know, and Kalen was what, 5'11, 210?
Yes.
Ran a 455. I mean, it's difficult to know where to put him because, you know, is he a bit like Jeremy Chinn in many respects. You know, a guy who can play close to the line of scrimmage as a box safety, really. Is he going to be you know, he's going to have to make his money on special teams, because at £210, he isn't going to play linebacker. You certainly can't hold up there. So really what you're looking for is a kind of a hybrid box running, alley running safety who can be a special teams captain. And I think that's, you know, I mean, it's disappointing for him that, you know, his body just naturally doesn't take on and add the weight that you'd expect. So to me, that's where he's going to be day three. Free agent kind of guy, and somebody that a coach or a, you know, is going to bang the table and say, you know what, I can make him into a, you know, I can make him into a backup hybrid safety. Don't worry, let me bring him in. Let me, you know, is he coachable? I don't know the answer to that question. You know, is he coachable?
The one hope, Simon, though, is do you remember what Matt Milano you know, came in at when he it was his turn at the combine?
No, I don't know. Not off the top of my
head. He was just barely over 6 foot tall and 223 pounds.
Oh, nice.
You know, and he was very much in college that light ish, you know, is he going to be a safety? He can't be a linebacker, you know, but all the plays that he made at Boston College were, a lot of the plays that he made were in kind of like in pass rush. And so he was kind of a do it all, but it didn't make a whole lot of sense either. And so at the end of the day, you know, the talent willed out. So, so that's the hope.
I mean, it could just be that kind of overhang nickel, couldn't he? You know, somebody that just comes in as, you know, role specific on obvious passing downs, because he is explosive as an athlete. He's very good in coverage, you know, his range, he can get sideline to sideline. And maybe that's just, you know, how he has to, you know, he can blitz well. He's a very good blitzer, you know, a number of big plays at Florida State, I remember, you know, so maybe he's just that primarily that kind of nickel overhang.
Like 10 and a half tackle TFLs, seven sacks.
Exactly. So, you know, there are certainly developmental traits there. And, it's going to be a coach and a scout kind of falling in love and thinking, you know what, I can probably do with something like this in a sub package on third downs and a special team standout and somebody that can cover as well. So,
All right, moving on to Friday, defensive backs and tight ends. Two great groups, I thought. Although tight ends, I wouldn't call it top heavy, because I think you could get a good player in the late in the top 100, but man, what a group. I guess we'll start with tight ends. There was a lot to like here, wasn't there, Simon? I'll go ahead and give you a guy that, man, he was twitched up, looked great, I thought, was Theo Johnson. But there was so much more to like. Your thoughts of this entire group, and I think they're going to improve on boards. I think before we were thinking one in the first round, I'm thinking there could be a second that could sneak into that first round, and I don't think Dolphin fans are going to like who I think that second guy might be. But what do you think, Simon? Good.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting group. You talked about Theo Johnson. We talked about I thought Ben Sinnott was excellent in terms of his performances and answering some of the questions in terms of times. Chris's guy Tip Ryan, I think, was excellent. Had a really good day. Dallin Holker, you know, he had the two-handed catch, but he looked good in doing what Dallin Holker does in terms of catching the ball. Devin Culp ran a ridiculously fast time at, you know, he's 231 pounds, but still 4.47 is fantastic. I think, you know, to me, that in many regards, the disappointment, in inverted commas, was the time by Jatavion Sanders. You know, you think there's a guy, you know, it feels to me, Chris, I don't know about you, maybe a little bit of water weight there at 6'3", 245, maybe, you know, probably played in the 230s, I would reckon. I just expected him to run faster. I do know he's a guy, I think we're all aware, he's a guy that the Dolphins, you know, are interested in and that they like. I thought Jaheim Bell performed really well. I think he looked good. The 4.61 was a really nice time for a player that's what he is. You get him in space, he's a Swiss Army knife, he's explosive, he bounces off tackles, he turns into a running back when he gets the ball in his hands. And I suppose the one disappointment, the one interesting thing, it maybe is the guy that didn't work out, Chris, which is, you know, Brock Bowers, who isn't going to blow you away with that size. I mean, that 6'3 for a tight end is, you know, that's small for an NFL starting tight end. You know, you're probably looking at 6'5". And I know the game is changing and it has changed. But, you know, he is, again, that felt a little bit like water weight. He doesn't look like a 243 pounder to me when he stood up. And the fact that he didn't practice, just, you know, you do see him sort of slipping a little bit into the teens. And at what point does he get into an area where, you know, I know the Dolphins don't have any picks, but at what point does he get into an area where you think he's, you know, you almost can't not move up to take him?
Yeah, I think so. About I, it's interesting because we were having a little bit of a discussion about this earlier today, and so about the tight ends, you know, let's start comparing it to last year, because last year was supposed to be a blowout year for the tight end class. Of course, the Dolphins didn't really participate, and we kind of all wanted them to. And then, you know, afterwards we got that quote from Chris Greer about both the, he was talking about tight ends as well, where he was like, you know, you guys are a little bit more worried about that than we are. But, you know, last year, I think if you look at the class, you did have up at the top, Dalton Kincaid and Sam Laporta went first two. And then you had Michael Mayer, Luke Musgrave, the Schoonmaker, who we made fun of incessantly, Brenton Strange, Tucker Kraft, Darnell Washington, Cameron Latu kind of pulled up the rear on day two, and didn't actually take any snaps this year because he was injured. So, but, you know, I'm looking at that and I'm kind of seeing it within context of this year's class. And I'm like, well, yeah, but as a top two, Dalton Kincaid and Sam Laporta, if you compare them to Brock Bowers and Jatavion Sanders, I kind of would take Brock Bowers and Jatavion Sanders, wouldn't you? Like in terms of what they, I loved Sam Laporta a lot. So, you know, I think that there's a good top two with this group. I think the Dolphins are interested in Jatavion Sanders. Yes, I was a little bit disappointed with Sanders, you know, 40 time, but sometimes that's about track technique. You know, there's a lot of track technique that goes into it. What I know is that on film, you know, when he was a little bit lighter coming out of high school, he did clock 21 miles an hour on the field, on football tape, you know, and there are ways of doing that. There, especially now with the advent of AI and different deep learning engines that can process tape. I mean, you can get that kind of data off of how these guys are moving on tape. And I'm not worried about how he's moving on tape. And so, you know, this is where you kind of look at it and say, hey, is this an example of where his track technique was just not very good? I saw some other guys that was like, you know, your strides are way too long. You know, your start is not good, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm not particularly worried about Jatavion Sanders. I know the Dolphins and Mike McDaniel in particular are very interested in him. I think Brock Bowers is, you know, no matter what he weighs, you know, yes, 6'3", 240 pounds or whatever. I mean, that just, we've sort of always compared him, or at least I've compared him a little bit to George Kittle to begin with. And that's basically what George Kittle was coming out. So not too worried about him there. I think Theo Johnson blew the doors off. I think that, you know, when you take aside the top two with as I said before, Brock Bowers, Jatavion Sanders, then Theo Johnson is the best looking Y tight end, like the best looking real genuine Y prospect. And then, you know, the guy that I talk about, Tip Rimon, he obviously blew the doors off of the combine, had, you know, one of the great performances there, as did Theo Johnson. I think these guys compare very favorably to, you know, guys in the back year like Brenton Strange and Tucker Kraft. I think that you look down the line and Jaheim Bell, you know, I don't. Well, let's say before I even get to Jaheim Bell, Ben Sinnott blew the doors off the combine. I think that you got to be, because you were very high on him heading into the combine based on his tape, Simon, and he did not disappoint at all. Like he had a really good combine performance. I think he compares very favorably to Michael Mayer last year. I mean, this is the same kind of guy, except he's even more athletic. You know, he breaks tackles like Michael Mayer does. And, you know, he's a good blocker like Michael Mayer was. I think that there's a lot of flavors in this draft at the tight end position. Then you add Jaheim Bell, and my comp for him is actually, you know, he should probably lose weight and try and be basically like an A.J. Brown type wide receiver. Like at this weight, he was, I think he ran like a 4.61 or something like that. I think he can run faster if he were a little bit lighter, but I think he plays like a wide receiver. It's not that he doesn't block. The only guy in this draft that I think doesn't block is Eric Hall of Iowa. And he measured in wonderfully too. He's over 250 pounds. But he plays like a real wide receiver. He doesn't really block. He's not really comfortable in a phone booth and in tight spaces. But I think Jaheim Bell is just such a, he's spicy. He plays with attitude and strength and dominance. And I think that he's a good receiver prospect, but you know, the way he is with his height, weight, the NFL probably going to try him, you know, in the backfield at fullback, at H back, you know, stuff like that. And I think he'd be a phenomenal contributor for any team. So,
yeah. By the way, something interesting to me, and probably nobody else, they showed Mike McDaniel every single day of the combine sitting in the stands, and the only day he was spotted with Anthony Weaver and Chris Greer side by side was when they had the DBs and the tight ends working. So maybe they're competing factions in the building there. You guys want to give us one cornerback that stood out? Because I heard something kind of interesting that Denner Jeremiah said, and I think I agree with him. He says there will not be a safety in the top 40. You agree with that, Simon?
Maybe. I mean, I think Green Bay are desperate for a safety. So I think Tyler Newbin is an interesting safety prospect that, you know, I think probably will go off the board first. In terms of the cornerback class, I mean, I thought, you know, there were some players that I was extremely disappointed in, and actually in safeties as well. I thought Cam Kinchin's just absolutely probably, you know, might have even pushed himself down to the third day.
He just crossed the finish line right now.
Yeah, I mean, Ennis Rakestraw running 4.54 at 183 pounds, I thought was pretty disappointing, given that he's getting quite a lot of love in the first round, back into the first round. Look, I think Mike Sanra still, just a guy I absolutely love. You know, Jalen McMillan, the Washington receiver, talked about how Sanra still was the hardest player he played against, and in the national championship game, he's literally lining up and Samuel Stewart's standing opposite him going, you're going to run this and this play is this. And McMillan said he knew exactly what the plays were, and he said he was just so hard to play against. Nate Wiggins at 173 pounds is awfully light, you know, and that shows up a little bit with his play strength. Who else was I impressed with? I thought the Georgia kid, Kamari Lassiter, was excellent. You know, 5'11", 186 pounds. I thought he looked really good. And then I think the main kind of takeaway guy, you know, Terrion Arnold looked excellent in the drills. I thought he ran a little bit slow, 4.51 wasn't amazing, but he was so super smooth in the drills. And then the guy that stood out for me was the guy that stood out in the Senior Bowl, really. That's Quinion Mitchell of Toledo, 195 pounds at 6 foot, ran a 4.33. I don't know about you, Chris, but I think they were the guys. I was most disappointed, I think, Kalen King, who I think had a, you know, high standing coming into the year. I just, you know, he ran a 4.61, and I think, you know, is this a guy that you can turn and run with receivers down the field? I think he was as disappointing as, and actually I don't think he was as disappointing as Kinchin's, because I thought Kinchin's just looked completely lackluster. But yeah, those were the guys that kind of disappointed a little bit.
I think we're going to get probably as usual a lot of cornerback to safety converts in this draft, and we're getting to the point where a lot of the safeties in the NFL aren't necessarily drafted as safeties, we're not necessarily safeties in college, I should say. So, you know, that's going to be the case again. And we have kind of a weaker true safety class, I think. You know, I do think that Sione Vaki is a guy to pay attention to amongst the safeties because of his versatility. So, you know, he's not necessarily among the headline names or higher rated players, but you know, he's a guy to watch out for. You know, you bring up Mike Sanra still. I'm natural. I love his game. I do appreciate him as a prospect. Think he's probably rated far too low right now. I think Cam Hart of Notre Dame is a guy that people are far too low on. You know, with his length, over 6 foot two and good length, good arm length and everything to go with it. He moves well. I think it shows up on tape that he moves well. I think his coverage skills, his hands are really, I appreciate his hands and his hand coordination, because the way that a couple of times he's been able to poke the ball out in coverage and tackling and such, and the way that he gets his hands on the football for a PBU. I really appreciate him. I don't think you find that sort of combination of his length and movement skills, cover skills, and hands very often. So I think that he's going to go probably a lot higher than people are having him right now.
Yeah, the other guy that, you know, Kalen Bullock, I think, is an absolute center fielder at USC, and I think he's a really intriguing guy, interesting guy, good length. He was 188 pounds as a safety, and he just, you know, ran a 4.49. He looked good. 151 split was excellent, you know, and speaks to how he explodes towards the football. But 188 pounds, that is light for a safety in the NFL.
That's true.
Almost impossible to play, really. Especially with the defenses that most teams play nowadays. All right, we're going to go to break now. And when we come back, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that Disney homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at wcufl.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
Moving on to Saturday, quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. Man, watching these wide receivers, you almost have to have one. You got to get one in this draft. If you don't come away, if you have picks in the top 100 and you don't get a wide receiver, you're really missing out. This is a great group. I thought Ladd McConkey made the most money out of anybody in this combine. You could just see his bank account getting fatter with each drill. Even that gauntlet, I thought he was perfect in that gauntlet, shortening the distance between he and the quarterback, catching it clean on the tuck and then dropping it, moving on, and then had a good time in it. Ran a 40 and under 4.4. Yeah, Ladd McConkey, I thought, was the big winner on Saturday. What'd you like, Simon?
I mean, there was so much to like. I mean, so many players who just performed really well, who measured in well, who ran well. You know, you go, look, Keon Coleman struggled. He ran a 4.62, which was one of the slowest, if not the slowest time. But then he had the fastest time in the gauntlet drill. And I think he, you know, that speaks to how, you know, he plays faster than he times. He'll probably end up going in the second round now. But, you know, and there's obviously stuff to work on in terms of his game. He doesn't run a full route tree, for example, and you know, he's not a great route runner. But he is an interesting player. There were some lower down guys. Anthony Gould, I thought, had a decent performance. Ryan Flournoy, who I really enjoyed watching at Southeast Missouri State, I thought he had an excellent performance. 6 foot, 202, ran a 4.44, looked really good in the drills. You know, 10-yard split of 153. He did really well. Obviously, you know, people talk about Xavier Worthy, and seeing that 4.21 is great fun, and, you know, it's an astonishing time. But to me, he has the exact same evaluation as he did entering the combine. You know, this is a guy that ran a 10.5 100 meters. You know, we knew he was going to be fast, you know, and he's also 165 pounds. And I know he cut some weight, but he only cut it from 172 pounds. So, you know, I'm not necessarily sure it's realistic that people are just suddenly piling on Xavier Worthy is going to be like the third or the fourth guy. The big guys who I expected to perform really well did. Brian Thomas was excellent. You know, Roma Dunze just continues just to blow me away with everything that he does. He's a great talker. He looks great. He's big. He's physical. He's fast. You know, he ran a 4.45 at 6.2, 2.12. Ricky Pearsall was excellent. I thought Marcus Rosamy Jackson looked good. Jamari Thrash, you know, he ran a good time at, you know, 188 pounds. So I thought there was an awful lot, Chris, wasn't there? There a lot of players. Xavier Leggett looked excellent. A lot of players where you just were like, yeah, I take him. The guy that disappointed me, Chris, I think more than anybody, was Troy Franklin of Oregon. 176 pounds. That's 11 down from his listed weight with the Ducks. And yep, he ran well, but I didn't think his drills looked particularly good. And, you know, his change of direction didn't look amazing. And, you know, in a deep collection of, obviously a deep collection of pass catchers, that could make a significant difference come draft day.
Yeah, I think Troy Franklin, I will say this, like, he pops up when you do the kind of the field testing of what kind of MPH these guys are commonly running at. I think that he pings on those measures a lot more than he did on during the combine with his 40 time there on Saturday. So yeah, it was probably a disappointing time. What was it, like a 4.41? I mean, can't even say it's that disappointing when it's a 4.41. But yeah, so I think he probably will try and do better at his pro day because this is a guy who, based on what he's run on the field and sort of clocked at different moments, that you'd kind of expect to be solidly in the 4.3s, and based on his game, which, you know, he is skinny. He is, but he is lengthy. He's drawing a lot of Marquez Valdez Scantling comparisons. I think that's probably a fair comparison in some ways. This class of wide receivers, it's loaded. We knew it was loaded. Start at the top with Marvin Harrison. Like, he's as good as he is. Also, he's as big as he is, which is kind of like, you see him measure at the combine. He's, you know, 6'3" and very solid weight. And it's just like, what is not to love, absolutely be in love with him. He's probably going to be the first non-quarterback taken.
Although that might not brilliantly as well.
Yeah, and although that might not happen, what we hear Diana Rossini was saying earlier, that the top four quarterbacks are just going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, according to a GM that she was talking to, and so the, you know, Marvin Harrison might have to wait till number 5 before he actually goes. But yeah, this is stacked. You have Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze easily belong up top, you know, with Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Brian Thomas showed the way he needed to show. I think that he had good interviews. He had good testing. For a guy that made so much of his hay in college on, as we said in the last podcast, vertical separation, running the go route, putting up the mailbox, adjusting to the ball in the air and finishing the catch. You know, that he did what he needed to do. I think that the Pete and Keon Coleman entered with sort of a controversial figure. And I think he left a controversial figure because that was the combine that he had. I mean, you said it yourself. He had a bad 40 time, and yet during drills, he was pinging speeds on the GPS that other guys weren't. Ladd McConkey, I think, made a lot of money. Easily going to be a very good prospect, probably first round. So I think that we've got. And then I should mention Xavier Leggett, one of my absolute favorite wide receivers in this draft. Of course, blew the doors off. He runs a 4.39. He's what, 223 pounds or something like that. 6'1".
Metcalf 2.0, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just an absolute brilliant athlete that didn't really produce until his final year of South Carolina. And that's where I think people are going to have questions. But at the same time, sometimes you like the guy that had to toil away, in frustration and figure out the formula, to make it work, because those guys, have an idea. Opportunities didn't come easy for some guys. And so they might know things, know more about being a professional than some other guys who the opportunities always came pretty easy for. And, I go back to a Cameron Wake with that. He was the same way in college. Light came on as far as his work ethic and attention to detail. That's what I see in Xavier Legette. That's what the guy destroys man coverage. And I think that a lot of guys just perform very well. I will say one thing about Xavier Worthy. He dropped down to 165, and this is where I have a little bit of disagreement. He probably dropped down to 165 because he was going for the record. Well, he went for it and he got it. So, it's not like you drop down to 165 and then turned in a 4.35. I think he dropped down because he wanted that record since he was a kid. And there's something to be said for prepping, for working hard, working the endless hours and preparation to try and do something that you've been wanting to do since you were a kid. And frankly, it's something that's important for the NFL too. I'm not going to minimize it, because it was important to Chris Johnson when he set that record. It was important to John Ross when he broke it. And it is similarly important to Xavier Worthy when he broke John Ross's record. I mean, John Ross went 9th overall. Nobody thought he was worth that. So this is going to make Xavier Worthy some money. I think there's something to be said for having a goal, going out and doing it. And as far as the weight is concerned, yeah, it is concerning to be that light. But at the same time, DeSean Jackson was 169 pounds coming out of Cal. He had a brilliant NFL career. I think that Tutu Atwell, we made a lot of jokes about him coming out, because I was actually a big fan, but then he measures in 165 pounds and we're talking about the wind blowing him away. But he's starting to blossom this year with the Rams. They started to use him particularly. They copied how Miami uses Tyreek Hill with those short motions, those fast motions. And he started to really blossom in the NFL. So I think Xavier Worthy has a shot in today's NFL in particular. I would pay attention to him. I would pay attention to his tape and what he can do and his speed and, just the overall what he presents to your team. I think he will gain back weight now that he's broken the record and got what he wanted to. But 170 pounds, if he's another DeSean Jackson, that's gonna be great for himself and his career.
I would worry about the play strength. DeSean Jackson is a strong player. Worthy does not.
That is the number one. I mean, Wes Welker's talked about that too, with the guys like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, who was only 180 pounds when he came out. And I think that the play strength is huge. It will be, something that deserves the scrutiny. And so I agree with you there.
All right. And finishing up here, offensive lineman, that was last day. Mike McDaniel stuck it out. Only he and Doug Peterson were the only coaches.
Get out there for offensive linemen. I mean, Jesus, if they've gone home, then we may as well all give up.
So I think we can finish up here. And I'll start with you, Simon. Troy Fatano, out of reach now, huh?
It's horses for courses, I think, in terms of some of these players. Like, we all have guys that we really like. We know that Joe Alt is going to go high. We know that Graham Barton is going to be in the mix in that first round area. We know that, obviously, Lefashanu or Fashanu, I would call him Fashanu in this country, but in America, you clearly call him Fashanu. Talizi Fuaga is going to go. Guyton is in the mix. We obviously saw Amarius Mims look like an absolute monster. JC Latham, is he going to play left tackle? Is he going to play right tackle? It just sort of depends on who. It's really hard to call, because it just depends on which team, which coach kind of really fancies which particular player. Who is Fuaga going to play right tackle? Is somebody going to move him to left tackle? Are they going to play him at guard? And different things will mean different things to different teams. Who will see Amarius Mims and seven career starts only as a right tackle? How will that be projected? Will they just think, look, here's a guy that looks like Laramie Tunsil, and we're going to play him at left tackle, but maybe we can't start him because he's only ever had seven starts and none of which have been on the left side? You know, Tyler Guyton, I spoke to a scout who said, you know, his ceiling is Tyron Smith, you know, but he's a right tackle. Now, does he move across to the left tackle spot? Is he going to stay at right tackle? There are some really good right tackles in this draft. You look at someone like Roger Rosengarten, who gets absolutely zero love. This is a guy that could end up going in the second round, was one of the most athletic offensive linemen in the at the combine at the weekend. So, because there are so many question marks, aren't there, in terms of you've got Fatanu at 6'3", you look at Amarius Mims at 6'8", you look at Fuaga, you look at, you know, Tyler Guyton is 6'7". There are, JC Latham was what, 6'5". And so I don't think it's out of the realms of possibility that he's available at 21 for the sole reason that certain teams are not going to not as highly regard. He doesn't hit those landmarks of height that you are looking for. You know, Green Bay is a team historically that is happy with undersized, in inverted commas, left tackles. Other teams will not consider a guy under 6'5". And also it's position. Look, do you look at Amarius Mims and think he's had seven starts? Am I going to play him on the right side or the left side, given he's never played a snap in college football at left tackle? You know, am I going to move him over there? But knowing that he's potentially got, you know, Laramie Tunsil upside, insane athletic movement skills, and he's 6'8" and 340 pounds and looks like Bucky Irving when he runs. You know, where's Fuaga going to play? Is Fuaga a right tackle? Is he going to be a right guard? Is he going to be a left guard? Is he going to be a left tackle? I think it all just depends on what teams are looking for. And you know that there's some really good right tackles in this draft. You look at Blake Fisher of Notre Dame, a really good player on tape. You look at Roger Rosengarten of Washington, mm-hmm. who's had absolutely zero love in this process, who is, you know, he's 6'5", he's 308 pounds, he ran a 4.92, he had the best 10-yard split of any lineman in this class. You know, there's a day one starter at right tackle. I mean, you even go down to people like, you know, and God forbid Miami takes him in the first round, but, you know, Patrick Paul of Houston, who I think needs to be broken down completely in terms of technique, but he's 6'7", he's 331 pounds. I think he had the highest bench press, even though he's got 36 and a quarter inch arms. I think he had 33 reps or 38 reps or something. So I just think, Alf, it's kind of, and Chris, I just think it's horses for courses, isn't it? You just can't really tell. You throw a Jackson Powers Johnson into the mix as well as another offensive lineman who likely will go in that sort of 10 to 24 area. And I just don't think with the four quarterbacks, the receivers, you throw in Neighbors, potentially Thomas, but definitely Neighbors, Odunze, Harrison. You know, there's a couple of cornerbacks that will go. You got Dallas Thomas will go. Some teams might fall in love with Chop Robinson in terms of what he did and go in that region. It's hard to think that you're going to get all of those linemen to go between picks, you know, five, because I can't see a lineman being taken before the sixth pick. Now, there may be a run on them, and you look at teams, Tennessee might, you know, Pittsburgh, the Rams could look at a center, but I wouldn't be shocked if Fatanu was still there. And I also wouldn't be shocked if he went at 13. That's just the nature of the beast.
I think on that tackle class, sum it up this way. I think that there's eight in the tackle class that, you know, I believe to have separated themselves from the rest, with the next group having guys like Kingsley Suamataya and Patrick Paul and so on and so forth. I think, you know, Joe Alt, Olu Fashanu, Talish Fuaga, JC Latham, Marius Mims, this is no particular order, but Troy Fatano, and Tyler Guyton, and then Jordan Morgan of Arizona.
I think who also performed really well.
He did, and he's reputed as a good athlete. So you know, I think he had one of the fastest 10-yard splits at 1.70, something like that. And that's about right for him, right? You know, that's so.
Yeah.
But just think about the fact that eight of those guys, if there's eight of those guys up there at the top, we have, what is it, four career right tackles?
Yep.
Among them,
Guyton and four Mims, career left. Latham. Yeah. Yeah.
Guyton, Mims, Latham, and Fuaga.
Latham, Fuaga, yeah.
Yeah. And those are career for right tackles. Okay. That's not, you know, hey, I played a season at right tackle or something like that. And then you got Alt Fashanu and Fatanu and Morgan who played left tackle. And I agree with you in the main that it's going to be, you know, what do you need? What do you need? What's your vision for this player? And it's going to be, you know, pairing up because of all that. But I think that Faltano, with the blowout performance that he generally had, you know, and I'm not just including the actual measures, I'm talking about the drills. He was just one of the best.
Like a tight end.
Yeah. It's one of the best set of offensive line drills that I've seen, you know, from that guy. You know, I think the fact that he's one of only four left tackles in that top group, then I think that yes, he probably will be out of reach for Miami at 21. You know, it wouldn't shock me to the end of my days that he's available at 21, but at the same time, I would say because he's one of only four left tackles, that maybe that helps him a little bit. Whereas some of the right tackles, Fuaga, Latham, Mims, Guyton, you could see them if, you know, because they're career right tackles, you could see them go a little lower than perhaps their talent. But it also depends because, you know, they're talking about in the combine, Joe Alt, you know, if the Chargers are going to take Joe Alt, they're not going to put him at left tackle, you know? And so he's going to have to move to right tackle. So are you going to have this situation where this very weird situation, you got a bunch of left tackles moving over to right tackle, right tackles moving to left tackle. You know, that doesn't really happen, in the NFL that often. You do see left tackles move to right tackle, but you do not see right tackles move to left tackle that often.
And if you're the Chargers, you could absolutely move down. You're a prime spot to move down, aren't you? Because you know that there are four career right tackles that you could take, you know, you could move down five or six spots, pick up an extra two or three at worst, and then still take a J.C. Latham or a Talisi Fuaga or whoever.
Mm. No, absolutely correct. I think that, and they've got, so they really are sitting in a good spot. Mm. And, you know, particularly since if the quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, then I think that they're sitting in a fairly advantageous spot where, yeah, they could have Marvin Harrison if they want at number five, probably. But they could also trade that pick to somebody who's, you know, really got the hots for Marvin Harrison and still pick up one of those right tackles. So, I think it's as you said, it depends on your need. It's going to depend on how you come out of it. But Fatano, unfortunately, from my standpoint, I am going to assume that he's not available at 21 because he's one of only four of the left tackles. And because he was phenomenal.
The guy that I think, and we talked about this, is Mims. You know, he's an archetypal. He's an archetypal Chris Greer guy, like athletic for days, insane size, upside off the charts, Georgia guy. The concern for me is that, to me, I think that because of all the issues that we have with the cap, and I think probably significantly structurally, we're not going to be a stronger team as we were this year in terms of pure talent. To me, this is a team that needs to hit, especially with the last two, you know, in inverted commas, failures with the last two drafts, not having the guys come through and replace players, you know, Tindall for Baker, Smith for Howard, yet, if that happens at all. I think they've got to find three starters out of their picks. I think they've got to find three starters. And if you kick off with a guy who only has seven starts, where are you going to play him on day one? You know, he's also 6'8", and you've got a 6'1" quarterback. You know, do you want a 6'8" guy playing left guard, clogging up your passing lanes for a guy who's 7 inches shorter? It's a very interesting question that I think, you know, I mean, I'd love to be in that room, but, you know, he ticks so many boxes, Mims, in terms of what you expect Greer to like, but then there are a lot of downsides. And again, they can't afford to miss.
All right, moving on.
That's fair.
Moving on to the interior offensive lineman. If I told you that there was a Wisconsin center that got a perfect next gen stats athleticism score, Would you be interested? I know I would. Because if you were looking at Twitter on Sunday, everybody was doing the Shaq meme. I don't know if you've ever, are you familiar with the Shaq meme, Simon? I wasn't familiar with your game. Here's the problem. Lance Zierlein has released his comparables already. And I got to say, I completely agree. His comparable for Tanner Bordellini is Michael Dieter. Besides Tanner Bordellini.
What?
Lance Zierlein.
He just phoned that in.
He phoned that in?
Yeah.
He's the king of the comparables.
Yeah, you love him, don't you, Chris? That's not accurate at all.
You love the guy because he's got a mullet and
I guess
it's definitely mullet power.
I've watched Wisconsin a lot. The Kellen Ballage Award winner is on that team. So, you know, I watched them. He just never struck me as a top prospect. Now he blew me away and blew everybody else away here at the combine. Like I didn't know he was this. He has ideal size. Everything's right about him. So I guess you want to speak a little bit about him. Go ahead, hit it, Chris.
I've been high on him for a long time, actually. I mean, I've been talking about him as one of the top center prospects. I mean, clearly among center prospects for the Miami Dolphins, you do have Jackson Powers Johnson. I don't know whether Graham Barton moves to center or not. I have a little bit of discomfort there just because he hasn't played center at Duke in a long time. And when he did play, he was still very young. So it's not as if he, you know, really stood out a whole lot. I think Zach Frazier, if you're trying to take a guy that fits the system for Miami, then Zach Frazier is your guy. I mean, you just pick him out of a lineup and say, well, that's the dude that plays like you need in this system. Jackson Powers Johnson, on the other hand, kind of might add a little bit of non-core competency to the system because of his power and strength. I think that those, and then Cedric Van Pran Granger with the, he's a high IQ player. He's very accomplished at Georgia. I think those are the guys that the top center prospects that we've probably always been looking about, but I have always included Tanner Bordellini at the tail end of that group. And I think that he is a guy that stands out with his length, with his mobility, with his technique, and just overall abilities at Wisconsin. And you have to take note when they're running the drills and before he even goes through the drills and, you know, he had some of the best set of drills outside of Troy Fatano. He had some of the best set of drills that you'd see. You have to pay attention when they're characterizing guys who have done the research into, you know, the character and what the schools say about him and, you know, what the interviewers say about him. And he's known as a cerebral center. And then he also, you know, blows the doors off athletically. I know Sean O'Hara, who's a great NFL center in his own right during his career with the Giants. He got up and talked about Tanner Bordellini and said that before he did anything. And he was just like, you know, I can't wait to watch this guy because this guy is really phenomenal. He stood out to him on tape. I think this guy has always stood out on tape to me. Not everybody's going to stand out on tape to everybody. I think that that's just the reality of the way the draft is. But for me, he was always in that top group, probably at the tail end of it, somewhere around where Cedric Van Pran Granger is. And I think that this combine performance kind of solidified for me that if the Dolphins were to take one of those guys at 55 year overall between Zach Frazier or Cedric Van Pran or now Tanner Bordellini, that to me is a home run at that level in the draft. And I think that he had that kind of performance at the combine, but he also had that kind of performance at Wisconsin based on what I was seeing.
A low lift number, Alf. I think he only had 20 reps.
21 reps.
Mm-hmm. But as Chris says, look, this is a guy that started left guard, he started right guard, he started at center, and he started at tight end all since 2022. So, you know, if you're looking for position versatility as somebody that can play multiple spots on the offensive line, then he is that guy. And, of course, he has a mullet.
Yeah. I think we could, unless you guys want to add anything else to this group, I think we
he also played, by the way, he played right tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the quarterbacks are interesting to talk about, Alf, just in terms of, you know, Miami obviously aren't in the market.
Oh, there was one guy I did want to ask about. Kingsley Suamata, your thoughts, Simon?
Ask the question and I'll tell you. What do I think about Kingsley Suamata? So I think he's an interesting player. Again, a multi-position player who's played both sides. He's an Oregon guy, Oregon transfer, a five-star recruit, and he's been a fairly dominant right tackle. He's only played 1 year at left tackle, so switched in 2023, and I thought he struggled early on in the season, just kind of getting his feet under him and hitting his landmarks, but I thought he got much better as the season progressed. And he's athletic, he's toolsy. Yeah, there are some technique issues, there are some football intelligence question marks, I think. He's Penei Sewell's cousin. Mm-hmm. As well, and he's a baby. He's literally just turned 21. You know, so I think there's definite upside there. The BYU coaching staff raved about him. He's the highest rated player I think they've ever had at BYU in terms of his star rating. Or maybe since the Lavelle Edwards era, the kind of the, you know, going back to the Ty Detmer kind of, you know, national championship era, certainly. But yeah, he's a big human being. Whether he's a right tackle or a left tackle remains to be seen. But I think there's definitely stuff to work with. And I think he's probably a day two, probably a third round, maybe early fourth round kind of guy. And it just depends on where you want to play, left or right side.
Simon, do you remember who your favorite tackle prospect from 2022 was?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Went to the Seahawks? Are you getting...
Oh, Charles Cross or the right tackle? Abe Lucas, yeah.
That's who Lance Erlein has him as a comparable.
Yeah, I don't think he's as accomplished as Abe Lucas was. You know, Abe Lucas was very
for our listeners, by the way. Abe Lucas went 72 overall.
72nd, yeah.
Yeah, I think Abe Lucas was very accomplished, very technical. I don't think Kingsley Suamataia is technical yet. The way that he's built. Or the way that he's come up. I do question whether, given what Simon says about Dolphins needing immediate contributors, with Kingsley, you know, I question coming from BYU against the sort of pass rushers that he played against over there, coming into the Dolphins starting right away. That would be kind of a question mark for me, but it's clear that this is an upside play. He's got nearly the same measurements as his cousin Penei Sewell. If you look at, you know, just the way he's built, the height, weight, arm length, you know, the speed, the agility, all of that stuff. He really tested out like his cousin. And he's ambidextrous. You know, he's moved from right tackle to left tackle for a reason. He is ambidextrous. And so that is a plus for Miami, you know, if we're talking about somebody to play left tackle in place of Teron Armstead, either this year or some future year. I think he's a good young upside prospect. But, man, he's still rough around the edges to me right now. I watched him in the All-Star stuff, in practices and in the game itself. And this is a beatable player right now. I kind of question that. But clearly the upside, clearly he's 21 years old, and he just turned 21 years old. And I think that's what you're looking at.
All right. I think we can leave it here. On Thursday, we will talk free agency. We'll be intensive on that. On the 11th is the tampering period, which essentially just means that free agency starts, because if you don't think there were tampering already in Indianapolis, then, you know. But we will get into that on Thursday.
Just mention the quarterbacks very quickly, Arthur, because I thought that Michael Penix was, you know, look, I know they're just thrown to air and, you know, not getting against corners or whatever, but I thought Michael Penix solidified all the reasons why we love Michael Penix in terms of, you know, the revolutions on the ball, the way that, you know, the ball just whips off his hand. He's got this kind of whippy delivery. He's got great arm strength, you know, just the ability to make all the throws. I thought Penix, you know, this is going to be a really difficult evaluation for people, because, you know, what he does inside, and, you know, when I'm writing the draft guide, as I have been over the last few months, you know, there is, he reminds me so much of Tua in many regards, not because of the, you know, clearly the traits are different. He's significantly more toolsy, but in terms of play style, in terms of accuracy, some struggles out of structure, his accuracy slips when he's moved from his landmark, and pressure sort of affects his clock. But in terms of the accuracy, the delivery, the timing, the whip of the ball, you know, all of those things, the layering balls to different layers of the field, Penix is exactly the same as Tua. And, you know, it would be interesting if, you know, if Tua didn't exist and we had a Mike McDaniel offense, because and yet we knew what the offense was, because you'd say Penix is the absolute perfect fit for a Mike McDaniel offense in terms of all of the things that we love seeing Tua do. Penix has the similar skill set. He just has the bigger arm.
But I thought he was I think Simon, along those lines, when you compare him to Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, because, absolutely.
You know, Matthew Stafford plays in this offense and he operates this offense, and so a lot of the things that he does are going to be, you know, pretty similar to Tua. I don't think he gets the ball out quite as quickly as Tua, but who does? You know, but at the same time, he's got the big arm, and you know, there was a time when Matthew Stafford could not stay healthy, which includes right now. And so, you know, I think that's the comparison to me, is like a left-handed Matthew Stafford. Just, you know, extensive injury history. And yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah. Also, Alf, I just want to say that Peyton Wilson, I thought, was outstanding as a linebacker. You know, the injuries aside, I thought he was excellent. And running backs, I thought it was great to see Trey Benson kind of confirm the speed that you see on tape in terms of what he does. But also Jalen Wright, who I absolutely love at Tennessee. I thought he had the best kind of overall combination of terms of, you know, the drills, the broad jump, the vertical, the 40, all of those sorts of things. I thought, you know, he solidified himself as a legit day two back. And, you know, this is a guy that's averaged 6.7 yards the last 2 years in the SEC. He's a home run hitting threat. And I thought he showed everything that he's my number two rated back behind Benson, and the gap is not very big. And I thought he showed it all in Indy as to the reasons why.
You know, some lower guys down there, I think Ray Davis of Kentucky and Tyrone Tracy of Purdue.
Good player,
he's a wide receiver convert with Tracy. I think that those could be guys that Miami could be interested in, you know, day three ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the quarterbacks, I don't think you can glean too much by the drills that they do, throwing against air in their underwear. But I was surprised that Spencer Rattler ran a 4.95. I thought he was a better athlete than that. I thought he would run like in the 4.7s.
He looked like he was going to fall over for the last 20 meters.
Yeah, he looked different. He looked different to me because he looked like a different picture of what I had in my head of what Spencer Rattler would be at the combine. I thought he was going to be like a twitched up quarterback, running like 4.72, 4.74 or something.
But he is
that
mobile on tape. He does. He can move the pocket and he can pick up yards. He's tough and he's such an interesting.
But when you're beaten by 28 offensive linemen, and defensive linemen, that's not good. And you're 40. You know what I mean?
I thought it was great that Joe Milton got a chance to show off the arm that he has.
Yes.
Which is just a ridiculous arm.
Yeah, I think the most valuable thing we learned about these quarterbacks is that Joe Milton can throw an orange 100 yards.
He is that is a monster arm. And that throw that he sort of faded away and almost didn't see the catch that went 71 yards. He didn't look like he put, you know.
No.
I was at flag football the other day and I threw a pass that went 42 yards and I felt my soul leave my body as I whipped it downfield, and it was caught and it went for a touchdown. But honest to God, like 42 yards, that's a long handoff for Joe Milton. It was just like unbelievable.
Yeah. Do you believe him? He says he can throw it 90 yards. Winds up to, you know, fire it.
On the right day with the right wind, I definitely believe him.
Yeah, really? I think he could throw the ball further on his knees than I could, or maybe even on his back than I could throw it.
Look, because we have some evidence. There used to be a quarterback challenge every single year, and Brett Favre has the all-time record at 78 yards. So that's Brett Favre. So I don't know.
No,
call bullshit.
I think he can, on the right day with the right wind, you know, I definitely.
In a dome. Let's just talk about a dome. Let's say right there in Indianapolis, you get to wind up.
Also, the good thing about the combine is, this is going to sound patronizing, I don't mean it to, but it allows players who are probably not going to make it in the NFL, and I class Joe Milton as one of those, the opportunity to show, you know, some you know, that throw that Joe Milton throws, he's going to show his kids that in 20 years time. And, you know, that's a thing that means something. Yeah. I don't think he's good enough to be an NFL quarterback. He just, you know, for reasons we can get into another day, but you know, that's something that, you know, and for all the Malik Nabers and Jane Daniels not measuring and players not having physicals and all those sorts of things, and you know, guys now having agents when they're 17 because of NIL and all that comes with that, and I think it's great that kids get paid in college, but it still affords those kind of lower guys the opportunity to go out and be able to look back and say, you know what, I performed at the NFL scouting combine and I didn't let myself down. And you know, mm-hmm. for Joe Milton, that's you know, kudos to him.
One last
thing,
because
I wouldn't be surprised if Milton got a lot of chances in the NFL, though.
I don't see him as a long term starting quarterback. He just doesn't seem to me to have.
One last thing before we get out of here. TJ Tampa, 3 days ago, there was a story. Well, 3 days before the combine, there was a story where he declared, I will work at the combine. I will run the 40-yard dash. The day before the combine, he cancels on the combine. He just shows up for interviews. Something there. You think he got hurt in training? Or do you have any other information on that?
He might have done. I mean, he did have a hamstring injury. So I wonder whether or not maybe he just felt like he wasn't. And I completely understand guys who think, you know what, you're gonna go out. Like Chris, we talked yesterday about Zach Worthy, who, or maybe it was you, Alf, talked about how, you know, he's coming back from the broken leg and probably didn't look himself, but you know, and he'll get absolute kudos for turning up and you know, performing through it when he's clearly not 100%. But there's no point in Tampa in a position that merits speed so importantly. If Tampa turns up with a poor hammy and runs a 4.6, you know, or lower, you know, no matter how many times he says, oh, I've got a bad hamstring, you know, that could push him down two rounds and cost him significant cash. So I do understand it.
Mm. Yeah. I thought it was just, you never see guys just cancel the day before, you know?
No.
So yeah, I think that's he got hurt. He got hurt in training for the combine. All right. We're going to leave it there. On Thursday, we're going to be free agency intensive. Maybe there'll be some movement as far as extensions from now until then, and we'll talk
I
about
can predict
that as well.
There will not be an extension for Christian Wilkins. He is Gonesville, ladies and gentlemen.
Oof.
Yes. And I think man, Houston has a lot of cap space. Chicago has a lot of cap space. I think he's gonna get the money. And I'll make a prediction.
Good for him. And look, I don't get people complaining about, oh, he's done this for 5 years and he's done that for 5 years and he's in the way, he should get paid by the Dolphins and blah, blah, blah. It's a business. It is an absolute business. And I absolutely applaud Christian Wilkins' ability to go out. And he backed himself and he won. Miami lost. And that's just how it works out sometimes. And it's great to try and keep everybody. But unfortunately, that's not the way. And as good as defensive tackles are, and certain ones are, Chris Jones has not won the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes has won the Super Bowl. Do you know what I mean? In terms of delivering in the biggest moments. Defensive tackles are great pieces, but they are not the four cornerstone pieces, and they do not individually themselves win Super Bowls. I've never seen a defensive tackle individually win a Super Bowl. As good as Aaron Donald was against Cincinnati, that game was won by Matthew Stafford driving down the field at the end of the game to win that. So,
And for those that are saying San Francisco just paid Jason Hargrave 4 years, $81 million, he just had a bad year. Okay, yeah. He was better in Philadelphia.
Frankly, I think Aaron Donald's the only guy that I've seen in a while that I would feel comfortable about that sort of
payday. You know, that is literally the only guy. You know,
people that are thinking that you're gonna negotiate with Christian Wilkins, I'm here to make a prediction. Only Aaron Donald and Chris Jones will be paid more per year.
Yeah, and why shouldn't he believe that he should be paid? Yeah, he the knock on him, and we said it all along, the knock on him was that he didn't have the sack numbers, and then he turned in, what, 9.5, 10 sacks last season, along with no letdown in what he has done so well, which is tackles for losses, which is playing, you know, as a high-energy energizer bunny along that defensive line, making tackle after tackle in the run game. And he delivered on sacks. Why should he not think, and I'm sure he will be, but why should he not think that he would be the third or fourth highest paid, at worst, defensive lineman in history? And good luck to him. He's been an incredible player, and I don't want to see him go, but unfortunately, that's the reality of the business.
Yeah. We'll get into it on Thursday, but till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.